Great.
All right, looks like we are recording officially. Welcome, Richard.
Hi.
Richard, who is now known as the Raja of relationship building and the Nabob of networking and the captain of connecting or connections. I can't remember exactly what I said. Yes, I actually got silly this morning and made some silly pictures of you in a Raja outfit.
I see.
But, you know, that's, hey, if you can't own your expertise in a subject, then what have you got? So, yes, welcome, Richard. Welcome, everybody else. If I do get kicked off the line, it's been known to happen before, and I am having some weird technology issues today. I will be right back. So if you lose me, Richard will just do a little song and dance for you until I come back. I'm calling in from Skype, and it, you know, usually works okay, but sometimes it's crummy, as we all know. Well, let's get started. So Richard Oseguera, if you don't know the fabulous Richard Oseguera, he is an author, he's an entrepreneur, and he's a professional speaker. And he calls himself an introvert icon, and he'll talk a little bit more about that today. But Richard brings reverence and a sense of play to making connections. It's one of the reasons I wanted to invite him here today, because I think we have a similar way of looking at how we connect with people, and me from the stage, and how I teach and train my audiences, and Richard in networking. And he knows that community is foundational in building business, and he knows the quiet strength of the introvert. And I think a lot of you here are going to relate to this today, because I know I have a lot of introverts that are in my community. His compassionate philosophy to coaching is simple. Everyone has something to offer, and everyone has the right and the power to shine. And again, I totally agree with this philosophy, and I share this philosophy. And he also calls himself a former wallflower, but now he is a multi-award winning entrepreneur, the founder of several six-figure businesses, including a chamber of commerce in New York City, and not a lot of people I know can lay claim to that. He's also the author of Convert Your Community to Cash, Monetize Your Connections, and he's a national television spokesperson on networking for business professionals. And I met Richard at an event a couple months ago that we both attended, stopped by his booth, had a little chat, and just from learning about him and his expertise and you know, experiencing his personality, I realized that he would be a really great fit for the Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series. So I took the leap and invited him. And I'm really interested in hearing what Richard has to say today about making network your friend. And I think you're going to learn a lot, especially my introvert friends. Richard's talk today is called Your Client is in the Room, Networking Secrets to Increase Your Confidence and Conference ROI. So I'm going to jump right in. Richard, you do describe yourself as a former shy guy and an introvert. And as I said, I think a lot of people who listen to this call will be able to identify with that, including me. I've mentioned to people before, they find it hard to believe that I myself was always very shy and am still an introvert. At my core, I am introverted. But you have an entire business that's focused on helping business owners develop confidence in business development and also in networking and professional speaking. So tell us a little bit about how you went from wallflower to an expert in networking who started all these businesses in this chamber of commerce and has found a lot of success in the industry.
Wow. Yes. Hi.
Yeah, that's you. That's all you.
I know. It's interesting to hear all that. I'll tell you a little bit about the shy guy thing, the introvert thing, and then how that got transformed and how, like you said, I've turned it into my business. As a kid, I was tortured during recess. You know, you remember that game Dodgeball that we had to play in school? So I was always the kid that was, you know, tortured first. I always got hit in the head first for that in our school, that the ball was red. So I always call it that damn red ball. So I grew up in California, in Southern California, in a suburb of Los Angeles, and the school was called Workman Elementary. And we had this chain link fence for some reason that we would line up against when we would choose teams. And so all the kids would line up against this fence. And I hated this process. And so I would just kind of like hold on to the fence for dear life, like hoping that one day I would just disappear, because this was just a torturous thing to have to endure for me. And, you know, there's always two team captains. I was never one of those guys. So the captains would start calling, you know, choosing the kids, right? And so you would hear, like, Lisa and Bobby and Stephanie and George. And it would go on. And then I would just have my eyes closed because I knew what was going to happen. And eventually the choosing of the names would stop. And I would open my eyes. And there's Richard, just sort of left over, hanging on to that fence, kind of like old milk. And that was kind of an awful thing to always know that I would be the last guy chosen. But the worst part was what came next. So then this conversation would ensue that went something like, well, I don't want him on our team. He throws like a girl. Well, we don't want him on our team because he sucks. And, you know, this kind of conversation. And then eventually one of the teams would get stuck with Richard.
Painful.
Yeah, you know, especially as a little kid. I mean, it's hard enough as an adult to go through something like that. But as a little kid, when you're still very in a formative stage in mentally, literally, biologically in your brain, you're not absorbing things as an adult brain does. You're taking in everything around you like a sponge, and it starts to become what you call your reality. So I learned that at a young age, some things about myself, or I believed, I should say, some things about myself, like, you suck. You don't belong on teams. People don't like you. Groups of people are bad. and so I kind of developed these thoughts, these ways of being, these ideas, these views about people and environments that had to do with groups and teams that pretty much led me to believe that I was better off by myself. And avoiding being in these situations where I could be rejected. And I call that sort of like the genesis of the shy guy syndrome for me. And, you know, and tons of people have a similar experience with different, you know, different aspects of growing up and going through group or team type of sports or environments in school. For me, it was compounded a bit because I'm an introvert. Now, that whole thing I just talked about, like getting chosen last on the teams and stuff, that helped me to develop this outlook about myself that I'm shy, and that would keep me withdrawn from people in a lot of areas of life. And then on top of that, I'm an introvert, and like you said, you're an introvert. Well, being an introvert or an extrovert or whatever combination thereof, those are genetic. It's sort of like you have blue eyes or brown eyes. Like, we're just hardwired that way, and it's the way that we take in information about the world. And that can't really be changed. You can learn how to work with it, but you can't undo your being an introvert. But the shyness was a learned response to things that happened to me. So I had this combination, and funny thing is, I went on to get into sales at a pretty young age. So being a shy, introverted salesperson is sort of like this recipe for disaster. My mother had a clothing store, so I helped her run it when I was growing up, and I got exposed to the world of retail sales, and eventually I worked in retail in high-end department stores, and I was really good if you came to I worked in the cosmetic industry, that's kind of where I got my start in sales. If you came to my counter, my cosmetics counter, I would absolutely be able to sell you things that you probably never would have bought before, and you would be so happy about it and go home with lots of new lipsticks, let's say. And I was really good in those environments, but if I had to interact with a large group of people or do any type of outside sales where you would be prospecting for clients, I was awful at that. Awful, awful, awful. And eventually, I moved to New York City, and I was making a whopping $30,000. And here, $30,000 a year. And here, that's sort of like the equivalent of buying your subway pass. It doesn't get you very far. Mm-hmm. And I realized that as a person who was in sales, that if I was going to be able to survive living here and actually make real money, that I was going to have to do something about my shyness and my inhibitions around being and dealing with people. And that's where I started to take a turn around exploring this aspect of me that was inhibiting me and keeping me from making money. And started learning about, I always read success material, you know, the books and listened back in my day, cassette tapes about sales and success. But it wasn't really, you know, it was all great, but it really hadn't become part of how I was operating fully. So now I started to take that stuff seriously, more seriously, and I had some sales training and some sales coaches, and I observed friends of mine who were really great at, they just seemed to know everyone. And I asked one guy in particular, his name was Dirk, like, how do you do this? How is it that everywhere you go, you know everyone? And he's like, Richard, it's networking. You have to develop a network. Like, what? What does this mean? So, yeah. So he told me what he does and how he met people and how he collected their business cards and how he cataloged their information. I just thought, wow, that is not interesting to me. That sounds like way too much work. But then he said this. He said, Richard, if you want to learn how to network, go to a gala. Because at a gala, there's lots of people who are like-minded, and they pay something to be there. And so it's a specific kind of group of people, and everyone is typically in a good mood because there's something that they're honoring or celebrating or some cause that they're standing behind. And it's just a great way to make professional connections. And I thought, oh, well, I can do that. That sounds fun. So, but I had never been to a gala before. So I choose one. And not only do I choose one, but I choose, it turns out, one of the biggest and one of the most expensive galas at that time in New York City. And the tickets were $500.
Oh, my gosh.
And at that time, this is like 2001 now, $500 was like $5 million. That same ticket now is $1,000 for this event. So just to give you some context. So, and there'd be 1,000 people at this event. I was like, oh, not a problem. Yeah, which is actually a lot of people. So the night of the event comes, and I go into the Sheraton Hotel on 7th Avenue in Midtown Manhattan. And as I walk into the lobby, I notice other men and women coming in who were dressed very nicely in, you know, beautiful gowns, or, you know, men in their suits and looking very confident and like they were supposed to be there. And before I know it, all of those thoughts and beliefs about myself, like, you suck and you don't belong here and people don't like you, all of those thoughts, just like in grade school, started to pop up. And it was, it became like I was walking through molasses. Like, literally, I slowed down and stopped eventually in the middle of the lobby of the Sheraton because I decided that I can't do this. I'm just going to turn right back around and go back home and forget this whole idea of networking because I know what's going to happen up there. Luckily, I started hearing some voices of reason too. And there was this one thought, this one concept that I had heard from a coach that says, if you're just willing to be bigger than your fears, you can do anything. And I thought, all right, okay, I'm going to listen. So I kind of held my head up high and put my shoulders back, and I went up into that gala, and there were 1,000 people there. And I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? But I realized I didn't have to meet 1,000 people. I only had to meet a couple of people because my whole goal for going was to just start to create some contacts, to actually start a network, because I didn't have one. I didn't have a professional network, or at least I didn't think I had one. And I stayed, and I did meet a couple of people that night, and they became my first what I call professional friends. And then I realized, okay, I can do this, and I can get better at this. I'm awful at this right now, but I know that if I keep practicing, I'll get good. And over time, what ended up happening is I became not only good, but an expert at how to network and what it takes and the mindset behind how to be a great networking, how to be a connector. And I went from being that wallflower to becoming someone who's known as an expert in this area. And you mentioned the Chamber of Commerce. You know, eventually I was the co-founder and the president of a Chamber of Commerce in New York City, where my whole job was to help other people network and to create networking events and educational events and bring companies together like American Airlines and Morgan Stanley and Avon to meet small business owners to create economic opportunities for each other. And completely turned around the whole thing of being afraid of people to becoming someone who not only is able to be comfortable with being a connector, but teaching other people how to do that same thing. So that's sort of how all this stuff happened.
Wow. That is such a great story. I especially love the fact that you picked as your first networking event a $500 gala. That's like go big or go home, you know? And I think that, you know, when you think about it, I mean, and I talk about this with people a lot, when you really invest in something, you're more committed to it, right? I mean, we talk about this about, you know, our client prospects and whatnot, and how when you're ready to invest in, you know, learning and improving yourself and getting help and coaching and training and whatever, the more you invest, the more committed you are to making change. So it sounds like for you, you jumped right in the deep end and you said, hey, I'm going to pay $500 to learn how to do some networking. But it had a good result for you.
Yeah, you know. It did. And yeah, I looking back now, it's funny that you should say jumping into the deep end. It seems that that's what I do. If I'm going to do it, I go all the way. What I learned from not going home, which was my inclination, I wanted just to leave that event. I was actually willing to just blow that $500 and go home and, you know, probably feel sorry for myself and sit on the couch and eat, you know, Chunky Monkey ice cream or something. In that time I didn't, though. I allowed myself to be bigger than the fear that I had. And that's kind of where the magic happens, right?
I love that quote. Be willing to be bigger than your fear. That's mm-hmm. so great. And, you know, you mentioned this thing about turning around and going home, and I've done this before. I haven't actually gotten to the networking event, but I have gotten myself dressed and put on makeup and gotten in the car and on the way thought, you know, I need to stop and do a couple errands, did some errands, and then turned the car around and went back home instead of going to the networking event. I mean, I've totally done this. And so it makes me think about this concept. In your book, you have a chapter about intention setting and mindset. And I think this is something that, you know, I'd love to hear you talk more about this, because I think for a lot of us who would find it really easy, especially if it's only a $10 networking event rather than a $500 one, very easy to just turn around and go home. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, intention setting and mindset?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. One of my current clients, one of my private coaching clients, it came out of me deciding to go to a friend's celebration. I was so close to not going because I didn't feel like going. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we let we let our feelings about something get in the way. It turns out that we could be leaving money on the table that way. So this client who how would I know that? That's actually a very funny story, and it relates exactly to what you just asked me about. This friend who I actually, an acquaintance who invited me to a celebration that was being had on his behalf because he had just landed this big spread in a very important interior design magazine. So I said, sure, I'll come because, you know, this is interesting and I wanted to get to know him better and support him, even though I didn't really know this guy, but it was like a new acquaintance. And then the night of the event came and I thought, oh, man, kind of like I got to take two subways and walk halfway across town, and this, I don't really want to have to do this right now. I'd rather be doing something else. But okay, I'm going to go. And I go, and a friend of mine who is an actual business, a friend and a business colleague, he too is a coach. And we're there chatting, and then this young man comes up to both of us and says, hi, and introduces himself and asks what we do. And my friend, you know, we pretty much do the same thing, different ways, but we're both business coaches, you know, in the category of business coach. We looked at each other and said, okay, this will be interesting. Because we know that we're both going to position ourselves in a way that, hey, this could be a client, right? So we introduce ourselves, and then he says, wow, that is so cool because I'm looking for a business coach. Now, that's kind of random. Like, how many times did that actually happen? But if I had not shown up, I call this showing up for success, which is a mindset. Like, you show up for success. No matter how you feel about it, you show up because as a business owner, if you're responsible for bringing in money into your business, then your job, your number one job is to always be showing up for success. And so I showed up, even though I didn't feel like it, and it turns out that this guy who was looking for the coach, he had introductory calls with me and my colleague, and in the end, he chose me. And I had a new client, and it would have been so easy for me to stay home and have a million other things I could have been working on. So I didn't. Now, one of the reasons to speaking about intention is, you know, I had an intention to go there to meet new contacts. It was a group of people that I basically didn't know. My colleague who ended up being there, I had no idea that he really would be there. So I was going into new territory with a new group of people that were unknown to me, and I wanted to expand my network. And so I had a really clear intention about why I wanted to be there. And I set that intention before I went. And then one of the things about intention setting is that in networking is you always want to go to an event, a workshop, a seminar, whatever. Those are all ways and forms of networking as far as I'm concerned. Anywhere that there are more than two people present, you have the opportunity to network, including standing at the line at Whole Foods or wherever you shop. Right? So I went there knowing that I had my intention to expand my network, and I decided in that case, since these were brand new people to me, that I just really wanted to be known in this new context and meet some new people. And the thing with intention setting is you want to set your intention for why you're going to the event before you get to that event. Mm-hmm. When you have that in your energy, in your being, like, I have this reason for being here, you actually come across as a more confident person energetically. It's almost like on a subconscious level, but there's a thing about you that makes you show up differently when you've shown up having a reason to be there versus just kind of hoping it all works out. So I always tell my client, set your intentions for why you're going to be there before you go to the event. Write them down on a piece of paper, have that in your pocket or in your purse or whatever you use, And remember that there's a reason why you showed up to that event. And you can decide what those intentions are for yourself 100%. Sometimes it is for new clients. Sometimes it's because you need to hire someone for your business. And you're there to find that kind of person. Or it might be a partner, someone that you want to partner with to help you with a program that you're doing. But you have to go in having an intention.
That's great advice, and it occurs to me for a lot of people who are introverts or who are shy, it may just be, the intention may just be, I'm going to go and talk to three people, you know?
Yes.
The intention may not, you know, it may seem way too ambitious to think about clients or anything like that. It may be ambitious enough for a lot of people to say, I'm going to talk to three strangers or something like that, right?
Absolutely. Just like my story about the going to that gala, before I learned anything about intentions, consciously at least, my only goal by being there was to meet a couple of people.
Right.
And at that point, I was actually, you know, I wasn't a business owner yet. I was in sales for another company, but it wasn't my own business. So I wasn't necessarily thinking about it strictly through the lens of prospecting, but I just knew that in order to expand my career horizons that at that point, I needed to have a professional network. So just meeting a couple people was a big enough deal for me. Especially if you are introverted or shy and you're working on getting over that or being able to work through that, having an intention simply of making, you know, two or three new contacts, period, and starting to nurture those relationships is huge and a great way to start.
That brings to mind for me this concept of reframing and rethinking, and this is something that I do a lot of coaching with my clients around, reframing and rethinking how they perceive public speaking, how they perceive their own abilities. And I see that you do similar work as well, where you help your clients kind of retrain their brain. So can you talk a little bit about that, how you can retrain your brain so you do become more confident and dynamic and at ease in these kinds of settings?
Yeah. So this really speaks to the mindset piece of what I do. So as I mentioned earlier in my story about being a kid and getting picked last and all of that. So what happens when we're learning, always, even right now, the way our brains are designed is anything that we experience or do with repetition, actually even once, creates what's called a neural pathway in your brain. Neural pathway you can think of as like a little highway that connects the synapses in your brain. They're little memory roads, if you will. And anything we do, whether it's once or many times, this first time that we do it, one of these pathways gets created. The more that we do that same action or have that same thought or go through that same motion, that road becomes more and more entrenched. It becomes more and more solid. And this is really how habits and memories are formed in the brain. And the brain is, you know, a computer, right? And it's all about systematizing and being able to run on automatic pilot. So so these thoughts that I had developed about myself around not fitting in or believing that nobody likes me and the fear of rejection, it all fits under the fear of rejection category.
Right.
Those were all automatic thoughts and ways of being that I developed, and they would just kick in. I wouldn't have to think about it anymore. Group of people, stay away. <You know? laughs> One person, safe. Two or three people, don't do that. There's something bad is going to happen. So that's sort of what I was kind of, you know, running in the background as the operating system with were these fears, doubts, and worries about people and what could happen. So the good news is this, though, is we have the ability and at all times, because the brain is what in neuroscience jargon they call it, the brain is plastic. It's called neuroplasticity, which means that the brain is malleable. It's able to continually change and build and shift, kind of like a piece of plastic is bendable, right? So at any point, you can create new neural pathways in your brain have the information that is going to empower you versus disempower you. So when I started to learn this concept in some different ways from different trainings that I was having, I realized that I could basically tell my brain with repetition over time how I wanted it to show up, how I want it to show up. And there's a process that I now call mind mastery. It's one of the things that I share with people who work with me. It's a very simple and effective way to train your brain to take on new ways of being. So I did start telling myself that I'm confident, I'm bold, I'm charismatic, things that were completely foreign to me and how I was perceived. And over time, because I programmed myself this way. I started to take those characteristics on. And now you said it yourself earlier, you know, people would never believe that you, I would never believe if you walked in, you do not look, you know, shy or introvert. I would never believe that, right? And we're very similar that way. You know, I'm standing in front of 100 people giving a talk, or, you know, mm-hmm. standing at my booth where there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people coming by, and, you know, it doesn't occur to anyone that I would ever be shy or inhibited in any way. Well, what happened was that because I trained myself over time to really embody these ways of being that were going to serve me, that's exactly how I started to show up, so much so that it's just naturally occurring. And now, instead of showing up as the shy, inhibited guy, people perceive me as confident or bold or dynamic. And I don't really have mm-hmm. to do anything about that anymore, because it's just how I became. So yes, it's totally possible to train your brain to come from a place of being empowered and powerful versus disempowered and inhibited.
That's great. And I bet those of you listening did not know you were going to get a science lesson today on neural pathways and neuroplasticity. But yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, you know, because we teach ourselves to be afraid of things, right? We teach ourselves, like you said, you know, I'm always going to be picked last, and people don't like me, and groups are scary. And we teach ourselves those things, and we come to believe them. So why can't we teach ourselves the opposite thing by telling ourselves the opposite thing? I mean, it blows my mind how it's so easy for us to do that negative thing, but we don't see that we can do the positive. And I tell people this too about for me, for example, panic attacks, that I have become really good at creating a panic attack, where I'll sit there and I'll think, wow, this is a situation where I should feel kind of panicky because it's really crowded or it's really hot or it's really whatever. And I'll start telling myself, you know what, this is exactly the kind of situation where I would have a panic attack. And then out of the blue, I will create a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm telling myself that this is the kind of environment where I would have a panic attack. Now, if you can do that to yourself, if you can do that to yourself in negative ways and convince yourself that you should be scared and that these things are terrible, then why can't you convince yourself of the opposite? So I think this is a great, you gave a great example of how to do that. It's something that we don't maybe try hard enough a lot of the time to turn the negative stuff into positive. The negative stuff is easy, right? Because you don't have to get out of your comfort zone. You don't have to. That is your comfort zone, avoiding situations that make you uncomfortable. And so you have to get out of that. But, you know, and when you start turning these thoughts around, you're forced to get out there. And that's scary.
Yeah, and we just have a lot more experience with the negative. It makes no sense. Like, none of it's logical. But
right,
we have so much more experience with being in spaces that make us uncomfortable, staying in spaces that make us uncomfortable or don't serve us. And exactly what you said, if all of that's learned behavior. Some of it's, yes, externally put on us, especially when we're kids before we have a full conscious capability. And after that, we do a good number on ourselves as adults. And then the more we stay in these negative places or in these belief systems, these limiting belief systems, the more proof we will keep getting externally as well to validate it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But we just have to do it. We just have to do it. And, you know, something that you talk about, too, is how smiling is our number one networking tool. And at the same time, when you're nervous or you're uncomfortable, it's hard for a lot of people to dredge up a smile. For me, it's not that hard because I've always been a performer. I learned how to do it when I was a little kid, marching down the street, twirling my baton with this big smile plastered across my face. But the truth is, you know, a fake smile is pretty noticeable. I mean, people, you know, may try to make themselves smile. Can you share an exercise with us that would help us kind of become more comfortable with giving that genuine smile even when we don't feel entirely comfortable?
Yeah. Ooh, this is good. You probably know about this because of your performance background and the training that you do. I am a big fan of mirror work.
Mm-hmm.
And so what mirror work is, and this is what, as you know, that actors are trained this way and professional speakers are trained this way. One of the best ways to see what your face looks like is to stand in front of a mirror.
Right.
And a lot of people avoid being in front of a mirror. We don't like the way we look. We don't like our hair. We don't like the way our body shows up. But I firmly believe that if you're going to be good or great at having people respond to you naturally, magnetically, and with interest, then you really have to, it's created. This is something that most people are not just naturally charismatic and attractive. And I don't mean physically attractive. I mean energetically attractive.
Right.
You can learn how to be attractive and magnetic and to really draw people to you. And a lot of it has to do with the energy that you're putting out. And a big piece of it has to do with that thing on your face called your smile. And and a lot of times we forget to inform our face that we're smiling. Like you said, that it's hard to drudge up a smile, and it is, especially when we're standing in front of a group of people or even one person. I know in my case, I used to think I was smiling, and it wasn't what was happening at all. I felt like I was smiling, but my face wasn't doing what I thought it was doing. And and even to this day, I will tell you this, when I speak, one of the things that I still have, whoever's working with me in the room, I will tell them, if you see that I am not smiling, you need to hold up a sign with a smiley face on it to remind me that I'm not actually smiling, even though I might think that I'm smiling.
That's a good
trick, actually. So one of the ways that you can practice this, though, is to lock yourself in the bathroom and stand in front of the mirror and literally practice smiling. And what happens is that what people think is a smile usually is what you called it, a fake smile. Now, mm-hmm. a genuine smile actually activates certain muscles on your face. In particular, the muscles that are around your eye, your mm-hmm. eyeball there, called the orbicularis oculi. You're getting lots of science today.
Lots of science. Who knew?
Latin and even. So the muscles around your eye, when you genuinely smile, those muscles are naturally activated, and they cause your crow's feet to show up. Now, in our culture, and I told you I used to work in cosmetics, you know, we spend a lot of money on trying to make the lines around our eyes go away. The downside to that is that those lines actually send huge subconscious cues and also conscious cues to other people. When they're present, when you're smiling, it indicates that that's a real smile and that your genuine smile sends messages about you, that you're trustworthy, that you're likable, that you're approachable. And all of this is happening at lightning speed in the brain, and a lot of it unconsciously. So you need to be able to know what your genuine smile looks like, and most of us don't. We're not staring at ourselves smiling. So lock yourself in the bathroom, practice smiling, and you'll know if you're really smiling because the lines around your eyes are activated. There's also lines that can get activated around your mouth, but for some people those don't show up as easily. But the lines around your eyes, no matter how old you are, will show up if you're genuinely smiling.
Yep. And yeah, you're right. I mean, that's one of the things that I learned a long time ago is that when you're fake smiling, there are those little muscles around your eyes that are not activated, and people can tell.
Yeah.
And You know, so I like the idea of practicing in the mirror. I know it sounds goofy, although I think what happens when you practice in the mirror is that it makes you laugh anyway. I think it makes you smile
yes.
more because you're, like, embarrassed. You're, like, looking at yourself in the mirror going, oh, my God, this is so embarrassing. And then you can maybe accidentally fall into a real smile. And you
yes,
see
exactly.
what, you know, you see what that looks like, but it really is like a little squint, you know, it's like your eyes sort of squint a little bit when you're doing a real smile. So
yeah,
I think that's a great idea because we may not always feel like smiling, but we have to do it and you don't want it
yeah.
to be.
And you actually just made me think of something too. Maybe you've heard the expression, you know, she was smiling with her eyes. It's even possible to communicate a smile without your mouth and strictly through the,
yeah.
or you hear this idea of a twinkle in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking of smiling and all that is visible of the eyes, you can convey so much of that sentiment of a smile just through your eyes. Now, I'd love, the other reason why I like to talk about smiling is because in a networking situation, especially when it comes to our friends who are shy or introverted, we're probably the last people to be smiling because we're nervous, we feel awkward, we feel uncomfortable, and a smile is not naturally going to be plastered on our face when we're feeling like that.
Right, right.
And if it's an event where there's a lot of people, it doesn't even have to be a lot of people, but, you know, let's say that there's 20, 30 people in a room, and you're shy or introverted, you're likely to feel disconnected and afraid to be in the midst of those people. You might be sort of at the edge of the room, plus you know,
mm-hmm.
where we get this concept of wallflower.
Right.
An easy way for a shy or introverted person to break the ice and to start practicing with becoming more confident and bold around networking is simply, in a networking environment, is to just smile at someone. And if you're
mm-hmm.
the first person to smile, a natural human reaction is to smile back. And
right.
then in that little space, you have this opening for the potential for a conversation. And it's really fun when you, especially if you're on the shy or introverted side, to be the person who instigated that conversation, who instigated that spark of a connection. It'll really build up your confidence when you're the one who caused that to happen. And you can do that without even having words come out of your mouth, but just having that smile and that acknowledgement of the other person and letting them say hello to you first, you're,
mm-hmm.
you know, it will just unfold naturally. That way.
I love that. I mean, I think that that's something that people don't realize, that no matter how awkward they feel with, you know, smiling at somebody, when you smile at somebody, it makes the other person feel good. You smile at them, then they want to smile back at you, and then they smile back at you and you feel good. It's, you know, it's a chain of events that
yes.
you can be in charge of. You can make that happen. By taking,
yes.
you know, just taking charge of a simple thing like making eye contact and smiling at somebody. I know I'm saying simple. It's not simple for everybody to do that. But it really
no.
is the first step in even having a conversation with somebody, right?
It really is. And you know, on one level, yes, it seems like a very basic, simple concept. But the reason I talk about it so much is because, like you just said, it actually takes practice, and it takes some getting used to being the person who's able to create these connections this way. And the other thing you can add to this too is this. So statistically, 50% of U.S. adults, 50%, so half of the country, says that they are either shy or introverted. So when you're in a networking event, you can just say, well, half of this room feels like me or worse right now.
Right.
They're as nervous or more nervous than I am right now. And it's what's really fun to do is you go find someone else who is not in the middle of the room, who's pretending to look at the art on the wall, or you know, who's been standing at the open bar or the punch bowl or whatever, you know, clearly you can pick them out because we, you know, like seeks like, right? So
right.
You can find these people, and because you now know this, and you have that little bit of extra ammunition around your smile as your secret weapon, all you have to do is walk up to someone who seems to be on the fringe of the event, and smile at them, and introduce yourself, and you will have broken the ice, and you're actually doing that person a favor, and you're helping to build up your own confidence as well.
Exactly. That is an excellent tip, and it's so much easier to walk up to one person than to try
yes.
to insert yourself into a group. And so, yeah, that, I mean, and I like to do that as well. I like to look around for the people standing alone because it's just so much easier, right? And like you say, you assume if they're standing alone, they also might be trying to avoid, you know, the interaction. And so you're doing them a favor. I love how you put that. You're doing them a favor.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
And then, of course,
because
helping yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just get excited talking about this.
I know. I do too. That's why I invited you. I think this is a really relevant topic to people, who are in my community who are uncomfortable with public speaking, because a lot of those people are also uncomfortable with networking. It's another one of those situations where you're putting yourself out there in a room full of strangers, and it's very relevant.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really wanted to have this topic covered.
The skills are very similar.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And there's, I talk a lot about being aware of how you're connected, and whether it's standing on the stage or you're speaking to one person, being aware of how you're connected to yourself, meaning like how you're in your body.
Right.
Being connected to the audience, whether it's that one person standing in front of you, or if you are on the stage and there's, you know, 500 people in front of you, being connected to the environment, the room that you're in.
Right.
And being connected to your capital S self. So for people who have a spiritual connection, like how are you using that in your networking and your speaking practice? It's all about being really in your body and being not just stuck in your head, which is where all of the nervousness and the chatter, the negative self-talk and stuff is taking place. When we can just be really grounded in ourselves, in our bodies, and feeling connected, then that's when we become magnetic. When I talk about being magnetic and attractive, not physically, but literally like a magnet, people start becoming drawn to you, and completely possible to be the shy or introverted person who is like a people magnet.
Yeah.
And it's just practice.
Boy, and isn't it better to be a magnet when you're a shy and introverted person so people come to you? You don't
it's
have
less
to go
work.
To
exactly.
Definitely less work.
Yeah.
You know, I have a couple more questions I want to ask you, but I want to make sure, because we're coming up on the end of the call in a few minutes, I want to make sure that you're able to talk about, you have a gift for our participants and people who aren't listening right now but are going to listen to the recording later, want to make sure that everybody gets to hear about what you're offering for the people who came to the call. And then, so share that a
yep.
little bit, and then we'll get back, and I have a couple more questions for you.
Perfect. Yeah, so as you mentioned, I wrote a book. It's called Convert Your Community to Cash, Monetize Your Connections, and it's all about networking. It's all about, like, how I went, a more expanded version of how I went from being the shy guy to becoming a networking expert, and it covers lots of points around abundance and mindset, and also the very nuts and bolts around networking. But what I'm doing is to give people a chance to get a sense of what I talk about in the book. I would be really happy to give you and everyone listening the first chapter of the book, which is all about abundance. And why do I talk about abundance? Because I believe If our ideas about money and making money are out of whack, then you might as well stay home and not put any effort into networking. Because
oh, what a good point.
From a business perspective, which I'm assuming our audience here is mostly people who are in business of some sort for themselves or bringing in revenue for themselves or someone else's business, you're selling. If you don't believe that that abundance is your birthright, which is actually the first line of the book, then it makes it really hard to put into context why we're out building our business relationships. So mm-hmm. the chapter talks about a kind of a different view of how to go into networking with an outlook on money and how you make money that is pretty, in my mind, expansive and kind of just like an abundant way to look at how to build your business. So the first chapter talks about this and sets the stage for building a really firm foundation of networking skills. So you can go to community to cash, communitytocash.com, and you can get the first chapter of the book there. And then I do these weekly videos, which are called questions that savvy business owners ask me about networking. So every week I make another very short video that's based on some question that someone asked me about networking. And they're really fun, and people really, really enjoy watching these every week now. So you'll also be able to receive these weekly video newsletters or videos from me. And those tips are golden nuggets that you can use and just practice something new every week about networking that I share with you. So go to community2cash.com, and that's how you can get access to the first chapter and to the videos.
Oh, brilliant. And I will send those the links out by email as well to the people who registered for the call. So, yeah. So
perfect.
If you all heard it here, communitytocash.com, and to get the first chapter of the book and to get Richard's videos. And then also I'll be sending it out by email. So if you didn't write it down or you forget or whatever, you'll still get it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I love that, the abundance idea. I think that's one of the hardest things for me as a business owner, as an entrepreneur who's been in business now almost 9 years, that whole concept of, you know, being an entrepreneur is a struggle. You never know where your next money is coming from and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, it's true to a certain degree, but if you, you know, when you turn that thinking around, like there's always another client around the corner, you know, there's always a way to make money. When you turn that around into kind of a more abundance mindset, I find that when I've done that, my business has grown. And because I, you know, it's like, when I stop thinking negative thoughts about my income and my business, things turn around. And I mean, I am not some kooky, like, you know, super spiritual person who believes in all kinds of, I mean, I am not that, as they say, the woo-woo kind of person, but I've seen it. I see it happen in my business.
Yeah.
And, I find the more gratitude and the more positive. Well, I'm already a positive person. Let's just say I was born an optimist, so I'm already optimistic. It's pretty hard for me to be too negative about things. But I know that the more I put on that abundance mindset, the more good things come.
Yep,
and like you
absolutely.
Say, what's the point of networking if you don't have that sense of abundance, you know, in your mindset? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's all about energy. Like, money is energy. And it's the flow and the transference of energy that is at the root of my view of networking. So it's exactly what you're saying. That's what we're doing. We're exchanging energy. We're transferring energy. And sometimes it's represented in money. Sometimes it's represented in other ways. But if we can be clear about that, and understand that that's what's actually going on, then it makes it much more fun to be in the process of networking and building and seeing people as gateways to opportunity versus just dollar signs over their heads, but gateways. And I talk a lot about that in the book and in programs that I do, but I know you have other questions for me, so shoot.
Yeah, well, you know, I think this is really the big question of the day. And you've given us some really great tips. So I hope that the people who are listening are going to take these, they seem really simple things like smiling and, you know, and showing up for success and these kinds, they seem simple, but they're not. And you have to do them and you have to make them happen and you have to change your mindset and set intentions and all these things. But I think the main question I want to ask you is, why are people so bad at networking? Why are people this terrible at networking? What are we missing?
I think one of the reasons is that we're just not taught how to network. And we know that we have to. If you're in business for yourself or you're in sales of some sort, at some point you're told, go to a networking event. You got to go meet people. Right. And so we do. We go, you know, we get to the event and we show up and we think that we know what we're doing. Actually, most of the times we know we don't know what we're doing. But we sort of just act our way through it. And then we keep doing that. And we get into these ways of going about it or habits. And we're just, no one ever really says, no. This is the way that we connect with people. And so we just have, you know, a country full of business owners who go to lots of events and they go and get training on other parts of their business, but they don't ever really get trained on an effective way to connect with people. Very few people take the time to learn how to do that. So I think that's, you know, the underlying cause is that people just don't know that they're doing it the wrong way. And another element of this is networking is really, I call it the art of human connection.
Mm.
And it's all about human beings connecting with each other. Sometimes in my personal networking is not to immediately hit people over the head with what I want to sell them. It's really about learning about who they are and what they do and what they need. And sometimes it's appropriate to have that conversation in that first meeting, and sometimes it's not. But at the end of the day, it's really about connections and building connections with people. And I say human connection because we in business settings we tend to become dehumanized, and we dehumanize each other. We see each other as potential transactions. That's what I meant by seeing dollar signs.
Oh,
over people's
yeah,
heads.
Totally get it. Mm-hmm.
And yes, we have bills to pay, we have mortgages to pay, we have kids to put through college, and all of that, right? So and we go to these events because we need to bring in more business, and so it becomes very easy to see the dollar signs. But you can do some business that way, but it's not the longer-term, more effective, conscious way, in my view, to build connections and build relationships with people. So I think people get it wrong because they're not seeing it as human connection, and that's mostly because we haven't been trained on how to properly go about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you say the dollar signs and so forth, you know, I think about all the people who've walked up to me at a networking event, somebody I don't know, with a card in their hand, reaching out to give me their card. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know you. Who are you? I don't even know yet if I want your card. And why are you approaching me? And I mean, literally, I've seen people walk around, like, handing out cards. They walk up to you.
Yeah.
They hand you a card, and they keep going. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Drive by. Walk by.
Walk by. I'm like, really? I mean, that's not what this is about at all. So, I appreciate your thoughts on that, the art of human connection, and that, and you know, as you say, conscious networking. And that the more you focus on building relationships with people and not thinking about how many clients you can get and how much money you can make and how many cards you can collect, but really, you know, how can you just meet, I mean, at the very basic level, how can you just meet some people and have a conversation and start building a relationship? And it's, you know, if you can focus on that and, you know, use the tips that Richard has shared today, you're going to be so much more successful at networking and turning those connections. Turning the connections into cash. Did I get that right?
converting your connections into connections.
Wow, it just came out, or sort of converting your connections. Yeah, okay, close enough.
It was good, yes.
I didn't even try. It just came out that way. Well, we're a little bit after the top of the hour, so I want to make sure that you know everybody can leave. And I appreciate everybody for listening today. And I know a lot of people are going to be catching this later on the recording, so I'm going to get the recording out as soon as possible. And Richard's link again, communitytocash.com, communitytocash. This is not one of those that has a number two in it. communitytocash.com. And then also find Richard on Facebook. He posts really interesting things. Sometimes he posts these videos, some of his videos on Facebook. And so you'll get a lot of great tips from Richard on Facebook. And so thank you all for listening. And I appreciate everybody who was able to come today and everybody who's able to listen later. And Richard, stay on the phone for a sec. I'm going to turn off the recording and end the call, and I will be right back.